From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. It's a weekly podcast where we bring you the politics and policy happening at the Capitol, and where we meet the people making the news and figure out why it matters for our lives. This week, we're talking with Representative Lauren Arthur, a Democrat from Kansas City's Northland. We'll have a few comments from other legislators, too, trying to answer the question of what now and what next. How does the governor govern, and how do legislators legislate after one of the most remarkable weeks we've ever seen in Missouri politics? It started with the State of the State address, a time for the governor and legislative leaders to set a tone, to shape the conversation, to roll out what people like me will be talking about. And we definitely got a conversation. It just wasn't the one the governor was expecting.
Good evening. Within the last 30 minutes, Governor Eric Greitens confirmed to News 4 that he did have an extramarital affair.
A News 4 investigation prompted this bombshell announcement from Governor Greitens and his wife. And in a moment, you will hear from the governor and First Lady.
That's from KMOV in St. Louis at 10 o'clock on Wednesday night. The story included tapes of a woman secretly recorded by her now ex-husband confessing to an affair in 2015 with Eric Greitens. That was before his election as governor. The governor and his wife acknowledged that accusation to the TV station, acknowledged that the affair happened. They said they'd work through it. They asked for privacy. But the story contained something else. The claim, again made in tapes shared by the ex-husband with the TV station, that Greitens had snapped a photo of the woman while she was naked and blindfolded and told her not to tell anyone about the affair if she didn't want that picture distributed. It's this later allegation, which the governor, through his attorney, has vigorously denied, that has prompted calls from Democrats for resignation and from many Republicans for investigation. On Thursday, the St. Louis Circuit Attorney, Kim Gardner, said she will conduct a thorough investigation. All of this largely overshadowed the legislative agenda the governor rolled out in his State of the State address. Understandably. We'll try to cover both things, though, today as we look to the future, if there is one, of Greitens' political life. Helping us sort through the shrapnel is the Representative Lauren Arthur. Welcome back to Statehouse Blend.
Thanks for having me.
I do want to add that we're always happy to have Representative Arthur with us. We did originally plan to have a Republican leader on the show, too. House Speaker Pro Tem Elijah Haar was to be a guest. I was scheduled to talk with him Thursday morning in Jefferson City. As he told me, he suddenly had some unscheduled leadership meetings come up. Our other Republicans have not been available for extended comment on this matter, but we hope to talk with more of them soon. Representative Arthur, how did you first find out about this this big story?
Well, a couple of articles have referenced that this was the worst kept secret in Jefferson City. And I had heard rumors of an affair just after the governor got elected. But it's hard to substantiate that. It was all secondhand. And really, you know, what do you do in that situation other than go on with the business of trying to govern and legislate? Wednesday morning, the morning of the State of the State, there were rumors circulating that this news was going to be made public and that there was a story forthcoming in that evening. 5 o'clock hit. Everyone expected it to be on the 5 o'clock news. It didn't happen. And so the State of the State proceeded without any unusual activity, but then at 10 o'clock, everyone saw the newscast.
About the time everyone was out of the Capitol, I was there as well, and it was sort of a strange thing as the reporters had sort of all filed their State of the State stories. Literally, they were packing up their offices and ready to head home, and then there were some people running back up the stairs.
I heard a funny comment made that every flu germ and rumor was floating around the Capitol that day, and I felt that was right, a pretty accurate description.
So, I mean, the report, if it's true, is pretty serious, particularly the allegation of blackmail. What's your reaction to it, especially now that you've had a chance to hear the governor's responses after the story aired, which included the response that although they were asked to comment about the affair, they did not know the full accusations being made and have denied those?
Yeah, I mean, as a human, it's difficult to listen to the mistress describe being tied up and blindfolded and photographed and then threatened. It's a tough thing to listen to. And after hearing that, I asked myself, is this the character or integrity of a man who holds our state's highest office? And for me, the answer is no. That that someone who is willing to do that does not deserve to occupy that office.
Are you giving him the benefit of the doubt at all? The only evidence is from this secretly recorded mm-hmm. tape offered up not by the woman herself, but by her ex-husband. Does that give you pause?
Well, like you said, the governor, through his lawyer, has vigorously denied the allegations. But given the circumstances that she was being recorded without her knowledge, just the content of her voice and what she's saying seems authentic to me. And then that recording was released without her consent. I don't know why she would lie in that situation. Although I will say it's worth mentioning that all of these things happened without her being party, without her giving permission for this story to be made public.
And in fact, over her objection,
exactly.
She asked media outlets that contacted her not to run the story.
And so for that reason, I am very sympathetic. And both for her and also the First Lady and the children who will be affected by this story. And I hope that we handled that delicately and that we're not attacking her, we're not attacking the family. But in my opinion, this is in the public's interest of knowing about these things because of the seriousness of the blackmail allegations and subsequent allegations about abuse. And also because the governor positioned himself as the moral standard bearer for our state. And that's something he actively campaigned on. And now, because of these actions, I think people's trust in government and faith in their elected leaders will be further undermined.
I mean, there have been a very few voices. The governor's come in for a lot of criticism from both Democrats and Republicans, calls for investigation and so on. There have been a very few voices that would say, you know, this really is a personal matter. It's not, if the investigation finds something more, then that can be pursued. But for now, he's the governor. We don't know that a crime's been committed. Why should this hamper the ongoing work of government in the state?
Well, I hope that we can continue with the work of helping people in the state. But realistically, I don't know if that's a possibility. This is a cloud hanging over our state house. On one hand, committees are being posted up for next week. I'm sure bills will be heard. Bills will be debated and that work will continue. But the Senate was already dysfunctional, and I can only imagine that this is going to bring it to a complete halt. I can't predict whether Governor Greitens is going to survive this. He strikes me as someone who's going to dig in his heels and blame Democrats or blame the media and give it as an example that he's battling against the establishment. He has no loyalty to the Republican Party. He really has no loyalty to any of the legislative leaders. And I get the impression that he has the attitude of, like, what are you going to do to me? Mm. But with that being said, there are still rumors that this is just the beginning and that there are more things to come.
The fact that there are rumors of any kind bouncing around is sure to have some impact on the governor's legislative agenda. At least that's what some people think. I asked actually one of your fellow Democrats from Kansas City, Representative Greg Razor, on Thursday morning, if this incident is necessarily going to cause problems for the governor's ability to do his job and fulfill the legislative agenda. Here's what he said.
I think it has to, because it now hamstrings the office of governor. Governor Greitens has, you know, obviously something else to deal with. He's lost a lot of credibility, and we have to see where we go forward with this. He has to do some soul searching. We probably have to do some soul searching and also wait for more facts to come out.
So what does that soul searching look like for you? What will be your soul searching, Representative Arthur?
Personally, I'm growing pretty intolerant of lawmakers bringing embarrassment to our state and undermining the public's trust in their elected leaders. And I'm starting to realize what people mean by character matters. And because of his decision to govern in secrecy even before these things became public. The governor has been shrouded in controversy for a long time, and I think this is just another problematic example of the governor's inadequate style of governing.
Are you worried at all about once this floodgate is open that it won't just be the governor who is affected by it? May not be just Republicans who are affected by it?
Yeah, no, that's okay. I'm all right with that. I think the state government, every year that I've been down there, it's been embroiled in turmoil of its own making. And I know people back home are tired of it. I'm personally tired of it because every second that we're devoting to these kinds of stories, it's time that we're not devoting to finding ways to improve our state. I think it's a time suck. It's consuming, and it betrays Missourians. I think Missourians deserve so much better in the people that they're sending to Jefferson City with hopes and dreams of seeing a better life because of the actions of those people. And I'm frustrated that that so much of our legislative time has been devoted to things like this. And I'm frustrated that we haven't been able to deliver better results for the people back home.
Well, in that spirit, then, of trying to focus on those issues that are facing Missourians, I want to ask you, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the State of the State address? and to ask you that specifically, I want to listen to a couple of passages from the State of the State and get your take on them, because to whatever degree the governor is still the governor and has set forth an agenda, this is going to be at least some of the legislation that is before you and your fellow legislators. One of the things that the governor talked about at great length in the State of the State address was taxes, and called for lower taxes. Let's listen to a little of what he said.
Last year, we faced a choice. We could cut spending or raise taxes. I'm proud to say that we cut spending and we did not raise taxes on the citizens of Missouri a single nickel. And early next week, my team and I will lay out a detailed, thoughtful, and thorough plan to cut taxes on the hardest working families in our state. It is the boldest state tax reform in America. And with your help, we will lower taxes for working families and make it easier for businesses to come to Missouri and create jobs. And we will do it in a way that is fiscally sound, maintains our state's AAA credit rating, and does not burden our children. In 2018, I want this body to cut taxes for the people of Missouri and to cut taxes for the businesses that create jobs. Let's get it done together.
That was Governor Eric Greitens delivering the State of the State address. And there, calling for lower taxes with plans that he will apparently roll out in this coming week. Representative Arthur, what was your reaction to that?
When he talks about cutting spending, let's really narrow down what he means by that. He means cutting in-home and community-based services for seniors and people with disabilities. He means cutting education transportation so that kids go to school 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week. He's talking about cutting our funding of our higher education institutes. And so there's a human face to what he's talking about when it comes to cutting spending. If we talk about the budget generally, they recently released something called the Consensus Revenue Estimate, and that assumed a modest inflationary growth of 2.5%. So $9.969 billion would be needed to fund a budget similar to what the legislature passed last year.
So there's going to have to be cuts, even if revenues held steady with current tax rates.
There would be an estimated cut of about $240 million this year. And that doesn't account for restoring a lot of the cuts that were made last year. So we're facing another year where we're trying to find where to cut. And, you know, a lot of people reference states as laboratories of democracy. And in Kansas City, we can look to our neighbors in the West and see what happens when someone enacts irresponsible tax cuts. It's worth noting we're still trying to figure out what the federal tax reform is going to do to our state and the people in our state. So we're working through that. But we can look to the example West and see that tax cuts don't always generate and often do not generate the promised economic growth. And when that happens, the government's ability to fund basic fundamental services is really impaired.
But what about the idea that these families benefit from having more money in their pockets? I mean, that's the central rhetorical argument that in the State of the State address, right?
Right, and I totally agree with that. When
you'd like to have more money in your pocket.
Well, I would like to have good roads and good schools as well. And when families are living paycheck to paycheck and they're just trying to get by, I think they do benefit from having a little extra money, and they spend that money in our local economy, and you do see that multiplier effect. But that's not the kind of tax cut that the governor is referring to. I'm pretty comfortable saying I don't think that's what the governor envisions when he's talking about bold tax cuts.
What do you think he means? And he did say it would be the boldest tax reform in America.
So I think he means cutting taxes for corporations. I think he's talking about cutting taxes for the wealthiest among us, because in his philosophical opinion, you know, those people already pay too much in taxes, and they pay a disproportionate and unfair amount. But when those, again, if we look to Kansas, when those people receive tax cuts, their money is being spent on vacations to Mexico, or their money is being put somewhere where it's not returned to the economy and where that job growth and development is not the natural consequence.
This is an election year. Mm-hmm. Republicans obviously have strong majorities in both the House and the Senate. Can you really imagine a scenario where when the vote comes down to whether to lower people's taxes or not, that you and your fellow Democrats are able to say cutting taxes is not the best thing for our state?
Well, I think we can make a case for why our state should be investing in people, why it should be investing in infrastructure, and why that will ultimately lead to greater prosperity for all Missourians.
Is there any aspect of the tax, and I know, as the governor said in the speech, he hasn't introduced the specific proposal yet, but is there any room for anything that that sounds like tax cuts or tax reform that you and your fellow Democrats would support?
Yeah, and I voted for the EITC, so the Earned Income Tax Credit. Yeah, and I think that's an example where middle and working class families really benefit from having those extra dollars in their pockets, and I'll continue to support that. But when we are when we're advantaging certain groups of people over other groups of people, I think that's really problematic. When it seems very regressive to me.
Another big priority that the governor laid out in the State of the State address was helping children in need. He talked about foster care, as he's been talking about. He and the First Lady have been really emphasizing the state's foster care system. He told the story of his own kindergarten teacher and how important she was on him as a child. He talked a lot about initiatives that he's going to introduce to help children in need. I want to listen to a little of what he said about that.
Now, our team has been working with members of this body on 20 legislative initiatives to help children in need. Now, some of these initiatives will help reform and improve Missouri's adoption system so we can get children into safe, stable, and loving homes faster. Another would help children get access to bank accounts so they can save their money. Together, these 20 legislative initiatives will make a meaningful difference in the lives of the children of the state of Missouri. Tonight, I want to ask the members of this body to do something straightforward. Put politics on hold. Set any differences you may have with one another or with me to the side. These are children. These are kids. There are 13,000 of them. We must love them and care for them as if they were our own, because in law and spirit they are. So tonight, let's join together and pledge to get this work done for the kids who need us most.
Again, Governor Greitens speaking before the revelations of the other night, calling on the legislators to join together. And I will say, Representative Lauren Arthur, he got big applause, bipartisan, for those calls to help children.
Yeah, I agree with and support everything he said. I sit on the Children's Trust Fund board, and recently we had lunch with First Lady Sheena Greitens. She spoke very thoughtfully about the initiatives, and these policies are evidence-based, they're well-researched, and believe it or not, I am carrying one of the 20 legislative initiatives that he mentioned.
Which one are you sponsoring?
So I am sponsoring one that changes the laws regarding assessment and treatment services for children in foster care, specifying that it must be completed in accordance with periodicity schedule set forth by the American Academy of Pediatricians.
I'm going to go ahead and tell our listeners that you are reading
from
that.
A piece of paper. basically, what it does.
Simple language, what does that mean?
It basically means that instead of requiring children in foster care to go to the doctor every 6 months for a checkup, it streamlines it so that they can go to the doctor every year, like any other child. And that might seem like not a big deal, but the fact that they get pulled out of class and they're expected to go to the doctor more often than their peers makes them feel different, and that's not a good thing. And aside from that, it can be re-traumatizing for kids to go to the doctor in some circumstances if they have an experience of trauma in their past.
How bipartisan do you feel like the rest of the governor's State of the State address was? There were a lot of applause lines. I was sitting in the press gallery. There were times when everyone clapped, but there were a lot of times when the Republican side of the House clapped and there was stony silence on the Democratic side.
Yeah, I think overall, though, folks agree that it's not what he said during the speech, but it's what was omitted from the speech.
Like what?
Like education or transportation funding, workforce development, a lot of the issues that should be the building blocks of how to grow our economy and improve our state were completely ignored.
And what do you make of that? You know, he talked a lot about education in his first State of the State address. Why didn't he mention it?
I think probably because there's a bit of controversy around education and some of the political games he's played with the commissioner of education. It's probably his attempt to not draw greater attention or publicity to that. Also, these are hard issues, and the state of the state was relatively brief. I would say it's not especially specific or substantive, and I think probably some of it was edited because he was fearful that maybe there would be the scandal breaking during or before or after.
And so you think, I've heard the others say that. Do you think he edited in order to keep it shorter so he could leave the Capitol sooner? Mm-hmm. Or do you mean edited in that he was staying away from the things that might further drive away potential allies if he gets in trouble?
I think more to the fact that he was looking to get in and out.
Okay.
And also I think he avoided the topics maybe because he doesn't have a vision for them, or he doesn't have a plan for how to implement his vision to become reality in the state. But these are tough topics, and they really require leadership from the governor, and it's disappointing that he wasn't able to use his platform to champion or advocate certain policy positions.
We talked earlier about the challenges that the situation now with the governor and the allegations creates. Let me ask you, in the least political way possible, how can you and your fellow legislators move forward? What's the most positive, proactive thing that could happen now to keep the gears from completely grinding to a halt?
That's a really, really good question. I think we need to look for areas where we can agree. And so often during an election year, legislators are finding issues that energize and excite the base as opposed to things that can bring broad coalitions together. So I hope that this is a time when we focus on, okay, we all agree that this should happen. We all agree that we need really high quality education. What are some of the ways that we can agree to achieve that goal instead of focusing on ways that we can go into our corners and throw bombs at the other guy?
And can you think of an example of an issue or a solution where that could happen? Is there something that you could introduce that you think would get broad support from Republicans or vice versa?
Yeah, I think there are a number of issues. Actually, I think legislators generally vote alike 80% of the time, and it's the big headlines and the big ticket issues that that are really a smaller minority than people would realize. I think we can focus on, there were a number of bills filed on both the Democrat and Republican sides that would introduce a streamlined sales tax or would eliminate with, right now, if you file your taxes on time or early, then you receive a tax refund for that. It made sense 70 years ago when that was implemented and people had a harder time mailing in their taxes. For this day and age, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's one way to generate revenue, and we could have conversations about how to spend that, whether it makes sense to devote it to transportation, whether it makes sense to restore some of the cuts that happened last year. And so, you know, I think there is general consensus around certain ideas. It's just a matter of hashing out the details.
Before we go, let's talk for a few minutes. It is an election year. I said as politics as much as possible. Now I'm going to ask you about politics. You've been very involved in the state Democratic Party. You're the state party treasurer. You are part of recruiting candidates to run in districts across the state, including some that are not usually regarded as competitive or mm-hmm. open to Democrats. What are we looking at for 2018 at this point? Do you expect to see gains for Democrats in the Missouri House and Senate?
Every prediction I've made for the past 2 years has been wrong, so I'm afraid to jinx anything.
which must mean that you've predicted gains for Democrats because they haven't really made it.
That's right. That's exactly right. So our job is just to recruit candidates who we'd like to work with, who we think will do a good job of representing their districts respectively, and to provide an option for folks who are maybe tired of what they've seen and endured over the last several years. So we just want to make that option available. Often people don't even have a Democrat to choose when they go to the ballot. And so I think our job is to focus on what we can do for the people of this state, articulating that clearly and meeting folks where they are, hearing what's important to them. And so in terms of an election, it's a big one for Senator Claire McCaskill. I think she's done a good job of staying focused on issues that matter to Missourians. It's a big year for Nicole Galloway, who's kept her head down and just done the work of the people. She plays a really fundamental role in being that taxpayer watchdog. And I think she's done a good job of identifying waste, fraud, and abuse and holding the people in Jefferson and City accountable, because right now we're imbalanced. There are super majorities in the House and the Senate, and they own the executive branch now too. So it's really difficult to hold a party accountable when they have such great majorities.
Well, and you've named the only two statewide elected Democrats,
right?
Claire McCaskill and Auditor Nicole Galloway. Is Nicole Galloway the only bright shining star of hope for Democrats as you look to trying to reclaim statewide offices, or who else is on that bench?
Oh, we have some great members in the House who I'm really excited to see their careers take off.
Like who?
So I am a friend and very partial to someone like Crystal Quaid from Springfield. I think she brings a lot.
Really the only Democrat in the House who doesn't live in the Kansas City area, the St. Louis area, or the Columbia area.
Right, right. So she brings a different perspective, and I think Bruce Franks, Peter Meredith in St. Louis, I'm roommates with Senator Jill Shoup, and I think she does a great job for her constituents. I have a long list. I'm really optimistic about what Democrats can accomplish in the years ahead.
And then, Representative Arthur, there's you. Your senator, Republican Ryan Silvey, just resigned to become a member of the Public Service Commission. There will be a special election sometime this year. Your name, along with several of your fellow representatives, Democrats and Republicans who live in the Senate district, your name has come up. Will you be a candidate to fill the unexpired term in the state Senate?
That's very good, Brian. Nice job. I don't know. I think that is a district that Democrats can and should win. And I know that the people there want someone who's going to be a strong voice, who's going to be an independent thinker. And if it is a special election, then the candidate is chosen and selected by the Central Committee. So I think that process needs to work itself out. I'd be honored to serve in any capacity that the public will have me. But with that being said, I'm not making any definitive declarations now or in the near future, probably.
So you're not necessarily in, but you're not ruling it out.
How's that for a politician's answer?
Well, we didn't really expect any different, but you never know. Representative Lauren Arthur, a Democrat from Kansas City's Northland, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Statehouse Blend is a production of KCUR Studios. We had help this week from Chris Young. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at PTSBrian. And if you don't already subscribe, please do that wherever you get your podcasts and review us there too. Also, tell your friends. And for continuing coverage from KCUR and drawing on public radio reporting across the state, tune in day and night to KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.